Nice. The referee is reaching into their pocket. Oh, he's looking at Walker Zimmerman. Oh, the replay. It's a red card. That can only mean one thing. It's time for a convenient win for a large market team and the Get Off My Pitch podcast, or tie in this case. My name is Eric Paisley, and with me tonight is...
John Brennig. Also salty.
Yeah, John and I are going to be talking about Complaining FC. They came to town. I hate peas, and John hates bad officiating, so let's get this started. John, what are you drinking tonight, buddy?
Well, since we are fresh back from Michigan, while we were up there, I bought some cider from a cider mill. And I mixed that with bourbon, splash of lemon juice. You're supposed to garnish it with ginger to help it. I didn't have fresh ginger, but it's still. So just a bourbon cider cocktail.
What do you call that?
It's what I Googled when I typed in bourbon and cider and the internet said, hey, mix these things. And I said, sure. I don't think it had a name, actually, from what I could see. So
I think – isn't rye and cider a horse's neck?
That might be. And I actually, that would have been better. I didn't use bourbon. I actually wish I had rye because bite, that, you know, spice, kind of would have been a little
ginger.
Better.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in addition to drinks, yeah. John and I will be giving our gut reaction to the match on Saturday. We'll be talking about the hardest working player, the MVP. I'm not sure how to do the middle section. We'll maybe talk about some questions and what did we learn. We'll do both. What the heck? It was a draw. Of course, we'll tell you who or what needs to get off our pitch. Oh, that one's going to be good. I'll just be adding a couple of notes from the weekend's non-Nashville SC soccer matches. We'll be talking about what's coming up next because there's some big games coming up. And, of course, John will be filling in what I got wrong. All right, John, let's kick it off here. What was your so you're traveling, but you got a chance to watch the match. So you watched the match remotely. What did you think of the match?
So I jumped in at like the 36th-ish minute, maybe a little earlier. So missed the first part, obviously, you know, jumped in. They talked about the highlights, so I got caught up with that. But from what I saw from then on, we played decently, but we definitely played on the defensive foot. Even before we went to truly park the bus at, what was it, the 80th minute or so, 81st, when we, you know, brought up Mayer for the fifth center back. They definitely outpossessed us. They pushed us. They looked like a team that wanted to win, which made sense given their position on the table. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of the first half of the Colorado game because they felt like their season was on the line then. I don't think necessarily the Galaxy season is on the line, but it's very close to that. And I feel like that's how they were playing. They had a purpose, they had a passion, and they wanted to push forward. And I think this is one of the to exasperate that, you might say, this is a team that does like to possess the ball. And since when we run up against that, sometimes we shrink into the absorb pressure counterattack. Mm-hmm. I think that led to a game in which we pretty much did that, which was absorb and counterattack and did not do a lot of possession on our own.
Yeah, I was there live. I was lucky enough to go live. Unfortunately, no one went with me. You were out of town unexpectedly, and this was a game. It really would have been interesting if we had gone to the match because there was a lot of off-the-ball stuff that was happening, a lot of off-the-ball. This was one of the first matches where there was a game within the game. I really started picking up on certain personalities don't like other people. The officiating was noticeably poor, and was the whole match. It didn't like end that way. Obviously it did end that way, but it was poor. And there was a sense of just blah about the whole match. It was just blah. Everything was blah. It was an exciting game to watch, but there was just this sense of dread. And there's a shout out to LA, Galaxy fans. They showed up in droves for this match. They came out, they were everywhere in the stadium. Their supporters section was completely full, was packed. And they were rowdy. They were loud. They were obnoxious. They were popping smoke. They were throwing insults. A couple of them got thrown out. They were what you would want in a traveling supporter section. Mm-hmm. So just overall, the match just had a very fingernails on chalkboard feel. It was very screechy, very just very rough. It was just rough to sit through. It was very tense. Even after we scored, I still just had this just like clenched feeling that something was going to go wrong. And maybe a self-fulfilling prophecy. That was my gut reaction to the match.
I can see that. And you mentioned a point about it, because, again, to be neutral, 9 yellow cards, technically 10, because that one turned into the red card. It was split pretty even, 5 and 5 each, again, if you count the red as a yellow, because it was a second yellow. That's just a lot of fouls. You know what I mean? Again, it was split evenly between the teams. I don't know what the actual foul count was. It was 16 to 12. Nashville had a few more. But that is a lot of intervention, you know, from the referee. Again, I don't think that they were all necessarily bad, but it's a lot of stuff.
I'm not trying to defend the officiating, because I think that they did a very poor job, but there was a lot of off the ball stuff that you could tell they were trying to get on our nerve. They were trying to push us.
Yeah.
This was the first match I've ever had an opposing player yell at me and the other people in my section. 44.
Mm-hmm.
He was jawing at us. And it was like, I don't know if Greg Vanney had told him, like, we need to get in their heads. And so it was interesting. I had never been to a soccer match like that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very interesting. And
I feel like what you describe is what we being some Nashville fans, I've heard joke about what we fear the Club America game would be like, you know what I mean? Where it's going to be a lot of spice and stuff, even though there's literally no weight on that match at all. It means nothing to anyone, but it's just going to be this crazy.
And
show,
I just don't feel like, you know, and I don't feel like Galaxy has like any sort of ill will towards us. I think that they're just, I just think they went in with a game plan. So I've already stated the fact that I like Greg Vanney. I think he is an excellent coach. I think Galaxy picking him up was one of the smartest thing that ownership ever did. So I feel like they seemed a little bit of a coach. Anyway, let's talk about the match. The hardest working player. For me, I have to give it to Dave Romney. Now, my perspective is because he had to defend Chicharito and super sub they have. Starts with a J. I can't think of his name.
Oh, Jovic.
We'll var
the fact that neither of us bothered to look up how to pronunciate that.
Yeah. The entire back line was working their tails off that entire game. They really did possess. They really did put it to us. And, I really wanted to give it to Zimmerman, but I feel like Dave Romney did most of the running. And I think they were attacking on Romney's side because they knew that Zimmerman he's a lockdown center back. So anyway, I gave it to Dave Romney. Who did you think?
Okay. Jovilovic.
Jovilovic? He's very good.
Jovilovic.
I've seen him come off the bench and do some incredible stuff. So
I remember early in the year reading some articles where people said, you know, because he had a hot streak of a couple games as a super sub coming on, they're like, should he start over Chicharito? Like, I know there was controversy, but he's a good player.
Well, let's talk about that later. I've got some thoughts on that.
I gotta give mine to Joe, which again tells you how the game went. The fact that Joe is the hardest working or MVP, if he qualifies for something, that tells you a little bit about it. But look, he saved the penalty. Last week, Chicharito did very hilariously bad things with a penalty, and everyone talked about it. We all know about it. It was hilarious. This week, he went for that. He did not try to get cute, and Joe still straight up saved it. It was beautiful. Joe saved plenty of other shots. There weren't – I don't know how many of them were really that much of a threat. A lot of them were near the edge of the box from outside angles. Like, they're – not many of them were really that threatening, but he was active. He was on top of all of them. And to mention, on the penalty that did win them the game, he got a full hand on it. That thing was just kicked so dang hard, he could only deflect it so far, and it went up. It just went up and in and carried over. You know what I mean? It just had so much mustard on it. He couldn't – I don't know many goalies that could have done anything more than that. So he got his hands on both penalties. He almost saved them both. I got to give it to Joe because he put on a great performance back there. And – you know, on the joyous broadcast team that brought to you once again by Twitter, the English broadcast of Joe Schmo, who likes golf references, and the guy who speaks Spanish but barely speaks during the game. They were great as usual. They talked about, they're doing a good job protecting Willis now, or, oh, now Willis is exposed and having to do work. But I mean, they mentioned Joe Willis a lot. And that's usually just not something you hear. Like you talk about, when you watch the game, you tend to be influenced by some of the broadcasters, how much they mentioned him. I was like, man, it was more than I like to hear. And his name was mentioned more in this game and in the past five games easily, which kind of tells you how it went. But he did a great job. He stood tall. I cannot fault him for that. He did everything he could to save this game for us.
Yeah, that's why. That's why for me, he's the MVP. I think without Joe, my MVP vote for this match goes to Joe Willis. I don't know if I've ever given him the MVP before. We don't want to make a habit of giving the MVP to our goalie, but without him, watching what he was doing live, those shots didn't seem that dangerous. They were very dangerous. I don't know. When I watched them on the replay, they don't look that bad. When I was watching them during the match, it's weird. You get a whole different feel. There was more to it because there were people lurking right beside him, out of frame, cutting to the right. I mean, it really emphasized how much work I think he's put in to his own craft, his own game. And I'm giving him MVP because he got it after the broadcast was over. He got a yellow card for screaming at the refs. They yellow card him after the match. He was hot. And I mean hot. They had to, I think Dax had to like escort him off the field. He was angry. And I don't know. I was like, that my respect for Joe Willis went from here to here. Like, I was like, that's the goalie I want. He's not the best, but I tell you what, that match, he was the goalie I needed. He's the goalie we needed, and that's the goalie I want.
Yeah. So my MVP, again, this is an unexpected MVP. I'm going to give it to Hani, but not because he did a spectacular job scoring goals. He did score the penalty. I mean, honestly, at this point, it almost feels automatic, even though he's only made, I believe, 5 of 7 this year. Mm-hmm. He had some troubles early in the year, but it feels automatic at this point. He's got his confidence back. But to me, when I was been looking at the stats out of the game, I look at the passing network. Hani on the MLS passing network, he's the most forward player other than actually Schaffelberg, according to average position. But, Schaffelberg likes to make his runs. He was farther forward in that passing network than CJ. CJ was kind of non-existent this game. You know what I mean? He disappeared a lot. Hani did a lot of the work. He was doing what we've come to expect in that dregs we had between June and July, where he was solely trying to drag us to a win. It felt like that again. Now, I want to mention, I got to give credit to both Schaffelberg and Shaq Moore and Leal. They played well. Leal wasn't quite as connected. Shaq played great. He had some good runs forward. Schaffelberg made some forays. But again, it felt like it was Hani trying to drag us forward and literally trying to put the team on his back. And so I give him the MVP of recognition of, we know who he is. It looked like he was trying to do it again, and he almost did drag us to that win. You know what I mean? The handball was kind of a freak thing in a set piece situation, but still, he was doing his best to try and drag us forward. And I looked through at the XG map, and all but three of those points were all Hani shots. All the XG came from him again. So we know it. That's the formula. People try to stop it, and they did an okay job of making the angles hard for him. But I think he still shown through on that, and so I just want to reward him, and especially because you also picked Joe, I wanted to kind of go a little bit different.
I'm gonna triple back your play on that. After the first half was over, I've never seen Hani scream at other players. I've never seen him do it. He was yelling at Sean Davis. He was yelling at him, like slapping his hand like this. He was yelling. He called Dave Romney over. Because at the end of the half, they kept kicking it down the field, just clearing the ball. He's like pointing at his feet. He is wide open. Like, you don't see it on the match. He was wide open alone up there. And he's like, you guys have to – he was like doing this. You have to see me. Yep. I got to tell you, that is a – like, I'm backing it. Everything you just said. That is a man who wants – he is going to drag us into the playoffs. He wants this. He wants that MVP. He wants that golden boot. He wants that championship. And just like with Joe, I mean, it's not tomorrow. It's right now. I want it now. I'm like,
And I like that we mentioned both these things because we've seen the fire from Dax, the speech that you can't directly credit to, but happened right before our great big turnaround. We've talked about, in the speech, the stump speech for for Hani's MVP candidacy. We've seen that from Dax. It's nice to see that fire from others, because you're right, Hani is a general jovial guy. He's going, you know what I mean? But he can get passionate, but to see that and to see Joe doing that, that stuff we reassure, because these guys want to win. This isn't, yes, you can point at whatever fact you want that caused this, that we, you know, end up with a tie, which again feels like a loss. But these guys do want to win. This isn't they gave up. This isn't they didn't try. They want this dang thing.
Yeah. All right. Let's take that was intense. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I guess we'll talk about what we learned and maybe ask some questions. I want to talk about, you mentioned a lot of other players, Schaffelberg, Leal, and Shaq Moore. I want to talk about them after the break, because I've got some opinions about that. We'll also talk about who or what needs to get off for a pitch. Oh, I don't know, John, what your opinions of what that segment will be like, but I think it's going to be pretty spicy. So stay with us. And we are back. You know, I failed to mention what I'm drinking. I'm drinking Sam Adams Oktoberfest, which it's now on, you know, it's stores. So not sponsored.
That time of year again.
Yeah, not sponsored, by the way. But you know what? If people wanted to, let's say, give us feedback on what they're drinking while they listen to our podcast, hopefully after work, not during, how could they do that, John? How could people tell us what they're drinking while listening to Get Off My Pitch?
Well, you can join us on Twitter at @GOMP_pod. And to be clear, we don't encourage drinking during work. We're okay if you listen to the pod during work, if that is safe to do. We're on board with that.
Yeah.
Just wanted to clarify your statement.
Just want to clarify that. Yeah. Sound like James Bond having a double martini at lunch. All right.
Or the Trebek Sean Connery. Oof.
So what do we learn? I want to talk about that, because I'm really glad you kind of opened the door to talking about the other players. I have opinions about all three. So you mentioned Schaffelberg, you mentioned Leal, and you mentioned Shaq Moore. Shaq Moore was really close in my hardest working player, because he, I think he put in quite a bit of work. Now, once they realized he would just control the game over there, they just avoided that side of the field. So it's almost like in American hand football where, you know, you just stay away from a corner like a Deion Sanders. Just don't even throw it down there. They started doing that because they wised up very quickly that his possession skills and his dispossession skills are very, very high. Yeah. But Leal's game changed. I really liked calling him out, because Leal's game changed when he got the yellow. That changed his game. He stopped. His edge was taken off. And I think it really kind of affected him. He is a linchpin in that midfield where we have to have him playing at a high level, because, you know, he's that X factor runner who can shoot from distance and will, right? to my great love. And
yes.
It seemed like after he got the card, he kind of collapsed on himself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'd say even more to that, I mean, I think smartly so, because he knows he can't get in trouble, and we were defending a lot, but he does, when we're playing well, he does all the offensive things you mentioned, but he's also good at the press. He works well with Sean or with Shaq on the side, or with Sean, because usually Sean's more on his side of the field in midfield. He works well with them to help press and to push up and to do a little of that, and we've seen, you know, you get a little cheeky and you get a little shovey sometimes, a little over hard on the tackles, a la Alex Mouille, but not nearly so careless. But we've seen that. But yeah, it does restrain him a little when he does that, and it makes it harder for him to, I think, play his game, because he's, I think, kind of constantly second guessing himself. Now, when he goes forward, he's usually pretty good. He'll go for it, and I mean, he'll still take the shots. But it does. It seems like Randall is part of a key to that press. Both Godoy and Davis did a good job. Dax can do a good job in the middle. Not in this game necessarily, but they can all press. But I feel like Leal is part of that key to the press. And CJ can be too. Again, CJ was a little quieter this game, and I think it's part because of their possession too. But yeah, I agree. Leal disappearing hurt us a little bit after that card, and it, you know, especially right before halftime, you know, of all times. And, you know, we mentioned Schaffelberg. He looked pretty good going forward. Back in possession was a little harder. This was one of those. This lineup has worked well the past couple games because we've been a little bit back and forth. We've had possession. We've gotten ahead, and we've been able to, you know, absorb pressure, get back on the counterattack, and look for that. I feel like we never really got that foot in the game and got that control. And I feel like the difficulty with this lineup is that doesn't quite work. Like Schaufelberg is a great player, but I think the reason Wheel was subbed on is he's got a little more control, a little more possession. He's a little more reliable on the defensive end, you know, and Schaufelberg just in this case wasn't really working because those runs weren't contributing. So anyway, I feel like this was one of those where our lineup that's worked for the past couple games just didn't quite click in this situation.
Interesting. That's an interesting take. I hadn't considered that. I watched Schaufelberg when he was on my side of the field, right on the on the camera, what I call the camera side. It seemed like in this game, he ran up against a very, very good defense. LA Galaxy is a good team. They are a very good team. They are well coached, and their defense are very disciplined. I think he's been able to take advantage of a bit of undiscipline, and maybe some teams that don't have a book on him yet. So he's sort of an unknown. But I think, again, a Greg Vanney team is not going to come into a Nashville and not know who's on the field. And I think that there was a lot of discipline in the way whenever we did attack, the Galaxy collapsed. They almost looked like us. They collapsed. Yeah. They were organized.
Yes.
And they stayed disciplined. And I think that really put two players on Schaufelberg. And he, you know, he's used to that one-on-one matchup. And I think he didn't handle that well.
You make a good point. We didn't really have a lot of odd man rushes, and if we did, they did a really good job of sticking to the guy on the ball in the next threat till other people could get back. Like they did the right job of, you try to slow the guy with the ball down a little bit, you cover the main pass, and then you try to let others come, you buy time till everyone comes back,
right?
And I feel like they did a really good job of being organized in that. And I think, to their credit, people don't think of them as a defensive team, but they really were organized back there. So yeah, that made it hard for us.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that I actually had planned to ask. So a couple. These are not uncomfortable. These are almost like these are sort of like things that have been on my mind. I'm really kind of worried that I'm really worried that CJ is in a slump. I mean, do you feel like he's in a slump, or am I just reading too much into that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same. I think you can see he's frustrated when fouls are called against him. You know, on the offensive end, he's trying to get a guy up in the header. He's still winning headers. He's still going forward, but it seems like everything he tries to put on goal. You know, I know last week there was one where he took the shot. Hani was right open. You know, if he had just passed that, you know, it's almost certain Hani's going to make that goal. But he went for it because, you know, he's trying to get those chances. He's trying to get back on the score sheet. You know, and I think that's your thing, is when it's not working, you try too hard, you do too much, you overthink it, and it doesn't work. I think he is in a slump. I honestly kind of expected Teal to start this, but maybe it was a little precautionary, or maybe there was something Gary saw in the lineup with, you know, a bigger LA Galaxy backline. He wanted, you know, CJ's aerial presence. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Teal start the next game just because of what's happened with CJ personally.
I don't know. Thank you for that. And I think my next question is a little more broad, but do you think the Galaxy seem to be obsessed with Chicharito? I think they're a better team without him. I think they focus on him so much. They have much better players than he deserves around him. I mean, I know that he's done a lot, whatever, but on the field, what I saw, he's nothing special. Like, he's not a Hani for sure. Like, yeah. I don't get the mistake.
At least not at this point in his career. And again, here, I think the biggest thing is Hani is in our midfield and the attack goes through him. And yes, he also happens to finish it a lot. Chicharito is extremely dependent on these other guys getting him the ball. And he's always been more of yes, he can do, you know, the occasional counterattack, but he's been a poacher of the ball bounces and I knock it in off a guy. You know what I mean? He runs in for he's, you know, doing a lot of those runs where you cross the ball and he's there and he's the guy at the right place at the right time, you know, catching rebounds. He's not necessarily a pure shooter. You know what I mean? He's not Leal pulling up from the top of the box. He's never really been that guy scoring from 35 yards, you know, Arjen Robben cutting in and flying in and off his left foot and surprising the goalie. So I think there's some of that. He's dependent on that and they haven't quite delivered, but I do agree. He's, like you said, there, you know, Jovilovic is good. And like I said, earlier in the season, he was on a hot streak and people were talking about, you know, I know Matt Doyle made a point that they were playing better with both of them on the field than they were. And like for a period of time, the goals, you know, the goals for were great with that and it was working. they haven't stuck with it, you know? So, you know, is it the formation? I don't know, but it does seem to be that he is the talisman of the team.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he wears the captain's armband most of the time, I believe. Maybe I was wrong. So there's something of that about it, but I don't know if he's necessarily always the best player on the pitch. The new guy, Puig, is he's good.
He's
you
good.
Know what I mean? He has a lot of hair product.
He puts a lot of hair product in.
He is not a tall guy. He's small. But no, he made his presence known. He is a tiny human being,
and he has a lot of hair gel. I can test that because he was trying to deal with it as he was walking over in the Nashville humidity. He's used to that dry LA weather. The humidity was really, and I helpfully pointed it out as he came over to bother the VAR guy. Yeah, it did elicit some chuckles from the surrounding.
That's good.
Surrounding fans.
It's good. I'm glad you of all people.
I'm just trying to help because the man was definitely in distress, and I was like,
is there someone in Nashville who's well known for doing hair that could help him?
You know what? You know what he should do? He should go see the Handsomizer. They're off. #not sponsored.
Not sponsored, folks.
Not sponsored. No. Okay, John.
So you asked me a couple questions. I got one for you.
Oh yeah, please.
Did you think that there was one thing, if we just fixed this, we were one thing away from this, or did this feel like one of those, everything just kind of came off and didn't work, or was it just, you know, we were this close to being that team? Was it, as some people say, don't park the bus at the 84th minute, bring a mirror, keep going for a second goal, or, you know, did you feel like there was just a one thing to tweak, or did it feel like this was kind of that conflux of a lot of things not quite working?
It's the latter, and I'll tell you, let me build my case. I've got a case to build here, and here's my pushback on that. I know that's on the internet, and I don't even have to be online to know what all the people are saying.
Yeah, Gary parked the bus, blah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, well, okay, great for you. It's easy for people to say that, right? But they don't have to deal with I think this is a good example of how the officiating affected the game because of all the inconsistent and poor judgment by that officiating crew. Gary is left with some of his key players in yellow card territory already. It's 20 minutes into the game. And I can't tell you, that's what made this so... Like I said, it was like fingernails on a chalkboard. It was just a screeching game. It was herky-jerky and chippy, and guys were angry, and everyone was chirping it. Like, even Hani was yelling at people. Like, it was just a nervous game. And it was because the officiating was so... I think that was part of it. I think the weather, it was gloomy and humid and nasty and... No one was having a good time, and the crowd, I mean, Steven was working his tail off trying to whip the supporter section of the game. I don't know. It was just a really strange game to be at, and I think that once the yellow card started piling up, Gary did what Gary thought was best. Now, the only thing that I would say different is that I would not have pulled Godoy off. I think that was a mistake. I think that, now I don't know what, obviously only Gary can answer what the decision was behind that. Pulling Teal on was a great idea because Teal, as we said, is a more possessive guy. And he was dangerous. He actually got Hani in a couple of good runs. So, I mean, it's not like you're just, he's not a defensive sub. But bringing Dax on is obviously a defensive sub. Godoy is much more bright on the ball, much more of a dispossessing center mid. So that was that. I feel like that was my only criticism of Gary's coaching of the game. But I think it was a confluence of the vibe of the game, the poor officiating, the fact that LA came desperate to win, the chippiness of the game. It was angry. There was a lot of off the ball stuff I was talking about. Texting you, that's my take. What about you? Yep. What do you think?
I tend to agree, but I think you hit on a good point. The Godoy sub did bug me because at first I thought he was on a yellow card, then I looked and he wasn't. And I was like, man, I don't know why we did that. Like subbing Hockenson on for Leal, I would always prefer Leal, but I get it. He was already on a yellow card. Like we said, he had kind of withdrawn. Lord knows Hawkinson's not afraid to get a yellow card in a defensive end if he needs to. So put on the guy that can afford to do it. But yeah, the Godoy sub didn't sit well with me. I think if he had stayed on along, you know, and we brought on Bunbury, it might have been different. But I do agree. I don't feel like Gary necessarily threw in the towel. And subbing in the next center back at the 81st minute is really not throwing in the towel. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we did it. I also question the whole 4 points of stoppage time, but I mean, again, there's been studies done about soccer stoppage time is a crapshoot, so I'm not even going to go there. But I agree. I think this was a confluence of things, a little bit, you know, some missed substitutions, the atmosphere of the game, the officiating, a little bit of bad luck, and, you know, it just kind of, it ended that way. Again, the good news is it was a tie. A few other results, RSL tying and Portland winning, helped us out.
Yeah.
So we're not in a bad position, but, you know, as a fan, didn't feel great.
It was not great. But last thing I'll say before we get on to our more of a lighthearted note here. I did the result disappoint me? Yes. But was it a fair result? Yeah. It was a draw. It was a true draw.
I mean, to put it this way, the XG was, I think, 2.7 for them to 1 point something for us. They outshot us.
Yeah.
They possessed it. Yes, it was a fair result, and yeah, I would take it given what they did.
Yeah. All right, John, let's put that behind us, and let's talk about something a little more in-depth here. Like, I want you to share with me, who or what needs to get off our pitch? The people want to know, I want to know, who or what needs to get off our pitch?
So to not give too much background story, the short of it is, my wife and I's passport expired in August, and we had to travel to Canada Friday. We knew about possible pending travel, and we didn't know when it was going to be necessary, so we couldn't send in to an expedite. So we drove to Detroit. We had an appointment for Thursday morning, 10 a.m., to go and do the passports. So we do. We go in there, sit, you know, go to the, you check in with First Lady, give them the stuff. They say, okay, here's your number. Cause, you know, even though you have an appointment, you still got to go through that classic, here, take your number system, because that makes sense. Whatever. So you do the pre check in, get your number, sit down. Yeah, 10 minutes later, we're up with the person at the window. They take it all. It all works out. Great. Pay for it. Cool. We're done. It's 10:30. Awesome. Come back at 3 o'clock for your passport. What do you mean? Well, they do it all in a batch and you can come between 3 and 3:30. They close at 3:30 p.m. I want to put that out there. Okay, so I'll go do other stuff and come back at 3. Cool, so I come back, pick up the passport, and leave. So that's all it takes to get a passport same day. You make it, but you have to have a document to prove the emergency nature of it, which is, yeah. But that's all it takes. Why does it take 4 to 6 weeks in a normal process? What are they doing with the rest of their time? How much bureaucracy is around this, and how long is this queue that you can take all these appointments, get these done? And I know that we were a 10-day appointment. There were others that came in after us, you know, 11, 12. I'm like, so you're doing these things in 3 hours, maybe, or less. But when I do it normally, I just mail it in. I hope it's 4 to 6 weeks. Come on. What is this crap? Get off my pitch with this stupid process and your shenanigans. I'm sorry. This is – no. Bureaucracy at its worst, blah, 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 blah. I'm grumpy about it all. And the fact that because I didn't know they wouldn't print it initially, we had to go home, drive 40 minutes to go home, then, well, to go to the relative's house, and then drive 40 minutes back to go pick it up at 3 p.m. So anyway, passport process sucks. Get off my pitch.
All right. I like that. So you know that you and I both have graduated, hold degrees from Vanderbilt University. And recently their hand football.
Allegedly. Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Their hand football team has restarted play in the in different formats, and I was keen on watching the first match here at home on Saturday before the soccer match. Excuse me, sorry. And it was an interesting viewing experience. And but what I want to focus on is the so my get off the pitch red card is for the Vanderbilt equipment manager, and I'll tell you why. So I was watching the punter, which apparently gets a lot of work at Vanderbilt. And so the punter is from Australia. Like, I guess that's a thing now, right? So you get Australian.
Oh, punters. Yeah, the Australian rugby. So you know, I've heard things about it.
Whatever. Sure, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So the punter has these gold. We had the gold bottoms with the black tops, and the gold bottoms were over his knees, like they're like thigh length. He still had the knee pads in, so it looks dumb But he has like those little knee, the little knee guard things inside these super tight pants that go over his knees. Get off my pitch with that guy. Come on, guys. Like, just take them out. Like, that looks so dumb. You're already struggling. Let's just say, let's be generous and say struggling, you know, maybe to build a program, build back a program. That kind of stuff just makes you look. Get off my pitch. Equipment managers at Vanderbilt University, get off my pitch.
Quick question. Should they also get off your pitch for that logo?
Oh, my. Well, let's not talk about the logo. That's not. This is not what this podcast is about. We could dedicate an entire podcast.
Bring back the V-Star.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes. Hashtag V-Star comeback. All right, John, we're going to take a break because we need to. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what's coming up next and what I got wrong. So let's do this. And we are back. I like that we both let the officiating people off the hook because I think I want to just kind of put this whole game behind me and kind of move on. So quick, the Metro Minute's coming up here. Just John always indulges me here, so I do appreciate it. So the Lipscomb-Belmont Granny White Derby, that's not a thing, but I'm calling it that, ended in a 0-0 draw. It was actually a cracking good game. I watched the whole thing on Thursday. And interesting note is that that is the 25th anniversary of the Granny White Derby. So I did not know that the program had started because I was there at Lipscomb in undergrad when the soccer program started in 93, but they didn't join the ASUN until 97 when they started conference play. So it was interesting. So that's how long the rivalry has been on. So it was a good game. Lipscomb did actually go on to win yesterday 4-0 in their first conference game. So they're back. They have dropped out of the 17th spot. They are back in the 20s, I think, 23rd. So still a highly ranked program, but disappointing match against Belmont at Belmont. So and shout out to the Lipscomb supporters. They had their own supporter group there, and they were very nice. It was nice to see a bunch of purple there. So shout out to the Lipscomb supporters. Meanwhile, down the road at Vanderbilt, the Vandy women tied Lipscomb 1-1. Lipscomb came back and scored a goal in the last minute to tie it up. So
what Vanderbilt, is Lipscomb doing, screwing up all the?
Yeah. So Lipscomb ties one of the top programs in America by miracle. I think if you would did the XG for that, it'd have been like 6-8 goals. But somehow the Lipscomb women pull it off. So they pull out a huge upset against Vanderbilt women. Vanderbilt's other game just finished and they won 4, like just literally before we started broadcasting, they won 4-0. So, cool. So they're back on track. Upset tie by Lipscomb's women's team. Because Lipscomb's women's team had not won a game in 5 games. They had not won one game, not even a tie, all losses. So,
whew. Interesting. Anyway,
all right. So, John, who is the Nashville Soccer Club playing next?
We are traveling to Austin, Texas to play, as you call them, the fighting all right, all right, all rights.
All right, all right, yeah. All right.
It's an 8 p.m. game broadcast time for us locals here. So,
is it another Sunday game or Saturday?
Math is hard, bro. Saturday. So, okay, that's good. Goodness. Saturday at 8 p.m. It's a respectable time. I was going to say, I think most of our games are on Saturdays now because, I take that back. No. One of the next ones is on a Sunday, and then Sunday after that. Never mind. Because I guess they still want to compete with North American hand egg schedules for some reason.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't know.
How are you feeling about, so how did Austin do? I didn't finish the game.
Well, this is what we should bring up. So Austin lost on Saturday to Seattle, but Seattle is absolutely fighting for their playoff lives. But they dropped 3 on Austin. A little bit, very interesting. Other thing is, so they lose by 3 on Saturday. Austin plays midweek. They play this Wednesday. They host Real Salt Lake, who is also fighting to stay in playoff contention. And then they play us on Saturday in Austin. So coming off 3, they're doing the 3-game in 8-day stint that we've done before, and they just lost the first one. They need to kind of get back on track. But again, RSL is fighting for a playoff spot. So are we. So all this stuff really matters. So they're not exactly going to get a cakewalk. So that being said, this will be an interesting one. The biggest thing is we know, thanks to last-minute refereeing, Zimmerman will not be playing when we travel to Austin. However, we've seen Mayer do a completely adequate, if not excellent, stopgap substitution. So I think it should be a good game. It'll be interesting to see how much it resembles the previous one, because again, we did a good job. We put three on them as well, but it's going to be in their home. I don't think it's going to be quite that dominant. I think it's going to be a lot more cagey and a little more back and forth, and I think we probably will concede something. So what do you think, and what's your prediction?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be a 2-1 loss. I think that Austin has had our number a bit, and I think that they are not going to want to. I think they're going to lay an egg against Real Salt Lake. I think they're going to have the midweek drop. And I think they're gonna bounce back against us. I think that's how it's gonna play out. What do you think?
Oh, the only other thing is, and I forgot who it was, but two of their players are on yellow card warning. So if they get them in the RSL game, they would be suspended for our game. So there's some questionability there. I'm gonna go with a 2-2 tie. I think they are gonna score on us. I think we're gonna score on them. I think it's gonna be a little more back and forth, a little more open than what we saw, because I think both teams are gonna kind of go for it. So I'm gonna go with a 2-2 tie with a little optimism, sprinkled in there. So
okay, all right, we got a VAR section coming up. So John, what did we get wrong? We got a bunch. So go ahead.
Well, for one thing, when I was quoting Dax about his talking about the last three games, the last three halves, I said, or the last six, you know, halves of games. I said quarters because football was on the brain. I don't know. Also, last week, you, sir, said everyone you follow lost, which was not true because I don't think the Vandy game was finished at that time.
No,
but
it wasn't.
We did win last week, so blah.
Yep.
I didn't look, but I believe Shaq did have the 7 assists. I think that was correct. And the other thing is you said – You played your little jinx card for this game, saying, you know, if I predict a loss, we win. It's not actually true because you predicted a loss. You and I both predicted losses for the first LAFC game.
Yeah.
And we were correct. So technically that jinx was a little something you made up and wasn't really done it.
No, it wasn't.
And the most important one, Eric, the most important one. What's the community phrase? Tell me, Eric, what is it?
Six seasons in a movie. I only had 5 seasons.
You said there were 5 seasons of Community. There, this phrase is 6 seasons in a movie. The movie has yet to be made.
I tried to play it off that season 4, the gas leak year, didn't count. But
the gas leak year joke, but no. Okay. There were 6 seasons of Community that all of you should have watched in that small gap in the podcast last week when Eric paused it and you resumed. So I hope you enjoyed them. They were great.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are good. Even the 4th season has some highlights. So. All right. I have nothing else. I do. Last thing before we break, you know, hey, Queen Elizabeth died. I do want to point out that, all the great accolades that she had. A friend of mine asked me, as a Scot, how do I, feel about it? And I was like, well, actually, I'm American. I am an American, Scot. But, you know, she was an ally to America when we fought the world's greatest evil. She volunteered her own time to work in a mechanics pool during World War II. Her life was all about sacrifice. And I like to point out the fact that she allowed Snoop Dogg into the UK in the 90s when Parliament wouldn't let, overriding Parliament to allow him to enter the UK.
I didn't know that.
Saying, quote, "This man has done nothing to us. He should be able to enter our country freely." And
that's,
you know what?
Brilliant.
Snoop Dogg has to this day never forgotten that. So I just want to say, I didn't know her, but let's give proper recognition to someone whose life was about something more than just being a monarch. So she was all right, and her mother was full blooded Scottish. So on that note, John, always a pleasure speaking with you, sir. Hopefully we will be talking about a win next week.
Yeah, I think next week's conversation will be a bit better than this one, but it's always good to chat with you, and hope you have a great week.
Yeah, have a good night, buddy.